Anyway, today I wanted to talk about something I find very interesting, and I hope we do here. We're seeing a lot of changes in the world here at home and in the world. There's so much going on, especially in Europe and then over Russia and things right now, that we might kind of forget about what I think is really the focal point of end times is the Middle East, more specifically would be Palestine or Israel. And we're not hearing too much on the news right now about what's going on in Israel. We hear a lot more about Syria, and really not too much about that either at the time. But behind the scenes, and you have to really look for things in the news, the tiny little nation of Israel is under tremendous pressure right now. Under pressure from, the leading powers in the world, from the UN, of course, and from the common market, the EU common market, from Russia, and even America. It's known as the quartet, I guess, the four powers. And they're pressuring Israel to reach a peace treaty, a sign of a covenant, if you will, of peace with the Palestinians. And in order to do that, they're going to have to give up land for peace. That's what they tell them. And the specific land they're asked to give up is really the crux of the matter, is what the Israelis call Judea, what the rest of the world calls the West Bank. And they've already sort of offered to give up a lot of the West Bank, up to 90%, but the Palestinians want 90%. They want all of it, but they might settle for 97%. The big problem is, of course, it was land that was given by God to Israel, but there's almost 400,000 Jews living in that territory. And too many to resettle. They'll not be able to resettle them, and they say they wouldn't leave anyway. So if you have a settlement, you're going to have over 300,000 Jews probably living either under Palestinian control or surrounded and in very close proximity to a Palestinian state. Sounds like a recipe for disaster. And in fact, a lot of the world, even the UN, they're already called this West Bank. They call it occupied territory. In other words, they've already in their mind said it belongs to the Palestinians and Israel is an occupying power. And they've sort of given them an arbitrary date of April 29th to come to an agreement. And if they don't, then you get probably the Palestinians going before the World Court and asking for sanctions, boycotts, maybe even military action, I don't know, maybe declare that the leaders of Israel are war criminals. You never know what will happen there for sure. And also there's a lot of turmoil about what will happen to the Temple Mount. Of course, the Arabs want the Temple Mount. And the Jews want the Temple Mount. It's the most holy site to them. And, of course, the Arabs have the Dome of the Rock Mosque. Some say, well, maybe there could be a sharing arrangement there. And also, then you have the argument about what will be the capital city of the Palestinians. And, of course, they want East Jerusalem. So there's a lot of questions up in the air, a lot of things, that's being proposed. And no way to know exactly what's going to happen if you listen to all this. But I think by looking to the Bible, we can get some insight about what may happen in this area and leading up to the end times. And concerning let's turn to Daniel 9. In Daniel 9, verse 27, we read a little bit about a covenant. It said, He will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. And that's a week, a prophetic week of years, not days. In the middle of the seven, in the middle of the week, He will put an end to sacrifice and offering. And on a wing of the temple, He will set up an abomination that causes desolation. So, I guess the question is, could that refer to the covenant if they sign this treaty? Could that be what they're getting into? It's, to me, that doesn't make it completely clear, but it's an interesting question. And if you go over to Daniel 12 and 11, verse 11 we read, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be a 1290 days or 3.5 years. And that's another question, you know, if the Temple Mount is divided, will Israel build a temple there? Well, this is talking about a daily sacrifice being abolished and the abomination of desolation being set up. So you couldn't have desecrate something that doesn't exist. So it seems that the temple will be built before the coming of Christ in the middle of that prophetic week. So that seems to give an indication, you know. Some people might say that, you know, that, well, times could end. Christ could come back tomorrow. He could come back next week or whatever. But we see there are things that are meant to happen before that occurs. And as far as the Judea is concerned, let's go to Matthew 24. Verse 15. Here, the disciples have asked Christ for a sign of when will these times be? When will be a sign of your coming? And this is in the midst of him giving this prophecy. Verse 15. When you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation spoken of through Daniel the prophet, let the reader understand. So again, reading about an abomination in the holy place, which is the temple. So it seems to reaffirm that will have to be a temple built at some point. It says, then, verse 16, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days. For pregnant women and nursing mothers, pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, for then will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world. So here we see a time of terrible distress and terrible urgency. And verse 16 is the key to it. It said, let them who are in Judea flee. It's a very specific prophecy about a specific place, Judea. And that's what we see today in question, and probably will be negotiated, where you will have many of these Jews living under, if not under the control of the Palestinians, at least living probably surrounded by them. So I think that gives us an idea of what this is leading up to, these kind of treaties they're trying to pass here. And as far as the temple being divided, let's go to Revelation chapter 11. Or the Temple Mount, rather. Not the temple, but the Temple Mount. The question of, will it be in a shared arrangement? Will they decide to just share the Temple Mount? Better get to Revelation. I'm in Hebrews still. Revelation Revelation 11, 1 and 2. I was given a reed like a measuring rod and was told, go and measure the temple of God and the altar and count the worshipers there. But exclude the outer court. Do not measure it because it has been given to the Gentiles. Here again we see that a prophecy concerning the Temple Mount and the temple. And there is a temple because he's to measure the temple. But do not measure the outer court because it has been given to the Gentiles. They will trample on the holy city for 42 months. And I will give power to my two witnesses and they will prophesy for 1260 days. Again, you have that 3.5 years of tribulation from the time of the, you know, that the temple is desecrated. So here again you see the temple on the Temple Mount, but you also see that the Gentiles are also on the Temple Mount. So it, to me, it indicates that there probably will be a sharing arrangement at the end time, that you'll have the Jews in the temple, but you'll also have Gentiles or the Islamic people still up there with their part of the temple. And as far as Jerusalem itself being divided, let's go to Zechariah 14. Zechariah 14, 1 and 2. The day of the Lord, a day of the Lord is coming when your plunder will be divided among you. Of course, this is a prophecy to Israel, to Jerusalem, really. I will gather all nations to Jerusalem to fight against it. The city will be captured, the houses ransacked, and the women raped. Half of the city will go into exile, but the rest of the people will not be taken from the city. This seems to indicate that even at the coming, second coming of Christ, that Jerusalem will still be under the control of Israel. That's not to say that maybe a little tiny enclave may be given to the Palestinians as their capital, but it would seem that the city probably won't be divided and half of it given to the Palestinians. Anyway, that's the way I read that. And some people might say, well, why even concern yourself with these things and why even look at these kind of things? No one can know them anyway. But let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Thessalonians 5, verses 1. Now, brothers, about times and dates, we do not need to write to you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety, destruction will come upon them suddenly, as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. So it seems to be saying that these things will happen during a time that people are thinking of as peace and safety, maybe when a peace treaty has been signed. But verse 4, it goes on to say, but you, brothers, are not in darkness, so that this day should surprise you like a thief. You are sons of the light and sons of the day. We do not belong to the night or darkness. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be alert and self-controlled. So it seems to say that we should watch the signs, so that we won't be fooled and confused by some who might say, well, the return of Christ is imminent, this is happening, so the return is imminent. We should look for the signs and try to look for them in light of Bible prophecy.
That's a powerful song, a very, very powerful song. The title of this message is Heaven is Coming to Earth. Heaven is coming down to this earth. Heaven is coming to us. We're going to see a little bit of why and how, and most of all, how wonderful it's going to be. How wonderful it's going to be. If you were to go to Hebrews 11, the whole chapter is about the heroes of the Bible. But it says in verse 13, they're all waiting. They haven't gotten their salvation. They'll get theirs when we get ours. And they're all waiting for the second coming of Jesus Christ. And that's what that song is about. Suddenly, Christ comes back. Then all the saints will receive their rewards at the same moment. Let's go to the book of Revelation, which talks about the return of Christ. And I want to emphasize why heaven is coming here and a few of the details that relate to the great reward that we have. And we just want to encourage ourselves to stick with it. Revelation 2, we'll start at verse 26. Revelation 2:26 reads, "He that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations." I want to emphasize the term power over the nations. Real power. You know, if you think about the world problems, I was watching I think it was Fox TV the other day, and the president's chief of staff advisor was there, and they're proposing a program to help, at least I think this is what it was meant to be, can't guarantee, but for fatherless boys who are running the streets in gangs and selling drugs and causing mayhem and, you know, ending up in all kinds of problems. And I thought to myself, I don't know what the details of the program will be, and so, but I almost feel with, let's say, 95% certainty, whatever program they propose will not solve the problem, because they don't have enough power, nor do they know right or wrong. They don't have the moral background as well, nor do they have the power to solve the problem. They might make a dent in the problem. They might make an improvement. And they might even make it worse. I know you're saying, that's not possible. No. You look at the history, the track history of many government programs, you look at the long view, they actually, unintended consequences, because they don't know right and wrong and they're defying laws of human nature and laws of morality, they might even make things worse. They're also proposing to give free breakfasts and lunches to all kids. We just heard that this morning. You know, that does sound wonderful in public school, but maybe they're trying to take control away from parents. Also, I'm told this at many schools, and that will vary. The kids don't like the lunches. They don't get enough protein, some of the kids, and they're throwing tons of it away, and there's a black market of snacks. In other words, they mean well, but it doesn't work. But we're going to have power, real power to really make everything work, because they can't control the drug dealers and the media and all the bad influences on the kids. We're going to have power to control all influences. Verse 27, and this is talking about Christ, but we will be with him and helping him. He shall rule them with a rod of iron, and as vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father. In other words, Christ is going to smash the governments, the armies, the administrative framework, the bureaucrats of all these nations, starting from scratch. And, you know, that kind of power, you know, rod of iron is tough power. It means we're not going to have all the corruption. And you all have some idea of the degree of corruption. When these dictators usually get kicked out of office, they go to Switzerland and join all the money that they squirreled away. It's an absolute mess, the current world is. We're going to have the power to really change it. And I was thinking about that rod of iron, and I said to myself, it's going to be wielded by Jesus Christ. Even though it's a rod of iron, he can get tough when he needs to be tough. Because it's Jesus Christ, you know there'll be a lot of grace, there'll be a lot of kindness. He'll give people room to turn around, but they're going to have to behave. None of that stuff will go on. You know, like the prophecy in Isaiah, when they'll see their teacher behind them all of a sudden, you know, What are you young men planning? They won't be able to get away with anything. And then the world will be a true paradise. The millennium paradise can only come with power. I mean, you could give, I really mean this, you could give $1 billion to the poorest country you want, maybe in South America, Africa, or out in some of those faraway Pacific islands, or India, and I guarantee you it wouldn't solve all their problems. Probably the governments would scarf away a good chunk of it. It was just spoiling, but just one big mess. We'll have the power to really change things, and the world will be led by the greatest leader you could have, Jesus Christ. And we all know the 12 apostles will have high positions, and David will be over them. I don't know what position Paul will have, but I imagine he and Daniel will probably be in charge of much of the nations. And anyway, it'll be wonderful. And we will be, it'll be done by the family of God, and we will be in the family of God. We'll be baby gods. I like that term, baby gods. It just, to me, it makes sense. Baby gods. We'll have a lot of learning to do, a lot of growing to do, but we'll be over the threshold. We'll be no longer human, no more terrible human nature. The devil will be locked away in the bottomless pit, his influence, and the demons will be gone, and we will be baby gods. I mean, that's wonderful. And I think the only thing we have to fear is backsliding. I like this expression that the Baptist church used to use, and it's mentioned in the Old Testament. It's like God's got us in his hand, and he will hold on to us. You can trust Christ, but he's not going to force us into his family. You can wiggle and backslide your way out if you allow the world and human nature to tempt you. You can backslide out. But if we don't backslide out, we will see Christ as he is. You know, in 1 John 3:1-2, one of my favorite scriptures, it says, when Christ comes back, you remember Moses on Mount Sinai couldn't actually see God. He only saw the backside of God inside a cleft rock with God protecting him in some way. But even what little bit he saw of God, he came down Mount Sinai glowing like a neon sign that scared all the other Israelites. They were running from him. Moses said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" Somebody fight the courage. "You're glowing, Moses. Put something over your head." For weeks he was that way. And he could only see a little bit of God, backside. We'll be able to look God in eye to eye because we'll be the same material, the same family. It's 1 John 1:2. That's a fabulous scripture. But moving on, as we are in the book of Revelation, chapter 2, I believe I'd like to... go to Revelation 3:9 now. We're moving into the same period. This is the church that has the best attitude. Everybody says we want to be the ones with the best attitude. Obviously, God makes that judgment. We don't make it. But what I would say is, let's try, as Lincoln said, to be on God's side, to be with God as much as we can. And if we do, these verses will apply to us. Because actually, all the letters to all the churches, if you've got ears, it says, listen, it applies to everybody. So we're all caught up in it together. Revelation 3, verse 9. Behold, I will make you, make them of the synagogue of Satan. In other words, they say they understand worshiping the true God, but they're misled. Which say they are the Jews and are not, but do lie. As Paul said, the true Jews or the true spiritual Israelites are us. That are circumcised in heart, which say they are Jews, they are not, but do lie. Behold, I'll make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I've loved you. Now, for people to worship at our feet, we have to be in the God family or it would be blasphemy. I mean, there's no other way you can take that verse. And it's plain and clear. Obviously, we're going to be little wheels in God and Christ, and others will be big wheels, so I'm not taking any power away from God, but that's what it says. We will be in God's family. And that is tremendous. Verse 10, here's why. Because, verse 10, you have kept the word of my patience. Now, what is God's word? The Bible. We try to obey the Bible as best we understand it. If you slip and fall, just pick yourself up, repent and you know, keep trying. You have kept my word of my patience. I will also keep you from the hour of temptation that shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. Now, this hour of temptation we often call the tribulation. Here's what I see coming. Whatever you want to call it, World War III or however it works itself out, the world is going into a dark age in a different sense. It's coming. I can actually sense it. The news that came out in the last few days is just an indication of it. And I want to explain what I mean by dark age. We know from prophecy that Babylon the Great is coming one more time, a giant empire in Europe, a Holy Roman Empire, but God calls it in Revelation Babylon the Great. And I know it's also the Holy Roman Empire, both. It's coming. It'll have 10 kings, and they may have other states that they control. But if you think of Europe, you know, from Portugal, maybe all the way to the Ukraine, the whole of Europe under one empire. An evil empire is coming. You can sense it. I was told that when this mess started in the Ukraine, our State Department called our head of state, and he wouldn't even answer us for an entire week. America's irrelevant, and they all know it. I mean, that's the sense of the world. America's become irrelevant. Now, maybe we're still a superpower, but the bad guys sense that we're on our way down. They sense it. You can tell it's like a wild beast senses weakness. The bad guys in the world sense that we're on our way down. Let me give you my view of things. In 1945, when World War II ended, America had demonstrated. And they say it was important for the Russians to see it. That's one of the reasons Truman dropped the bomb. Not the only one. The main reason was to save maybe 500,000 American soldiers because invading Japan looked like a nightmare. As a matter of fact, all the islands the Americans took as they moved up to the Japanese homeland, the Japanese fought almost to the last man. And many of the islands, not even one Japanese soldier surrendered. They did the bonsai charge. You can read about how gruesome it was, and they lost a whole lot of troops taking islands. When the battle was won, our Navy had won the battle. They were surrounded. We had naval supremacy, air supremacy. But the Japanese soldiers said, "We don't care." And they thought, boy, if we go after the entire homeland of Japan, and they were arming 12 and 13-year-old boys, at least that's what the video, whether they would have fought, I don't know, but and it probably would have cost several million Japanese. And the war was already won. It wasn't a question of the Japanese could win. It was just a question of, so Truman saved maybe a quarter, 500,000 American lives, maybe more that had been lost all the way up to that point and then some. But also he dropped the bomb to send a message to the Soviet Empire. And they got the message, all right. At that point, America had the biggest navy in the world, far away. After they sunk the Japanese fleet, except for a few British carriers, the only country with carriers, the gigantic Air Force with those super fortress bombers, and the only country with the A-bomb. But America was a benign leader of the world. They could have run wild. You just think of the Japanese warlords, Hitler. I can rattle off a couple other nations, but I won't embarrass somebody. If they had had that situation, what do you think would have happened? It would have been dictatorial evil. America was benign, rebuilt Japan, rebuilt Europe, and basically fought the free countries from the tyranny of communism. I'm not saying everything was perfect, of course not, but in other words, America's leadership of the world has been benign. Now that America's leadership is setting, I guarantee you, the ones who are going to, they say nature abhors a vacuum, that's true in power politics. I guarantee you, what's going to replace America is going to be evil. Anti-Semitism's growing in Europe just like before World War II. I can sense it. I can feel it. How long it's going to take? Maybe 3 or 4 years. China's building, I think, a second aircraft carrier. They're coming out. They're trying to show their power vis-a-vis Japan. That'll just make Japan rearm. The Middle East will probably end up in an arms race to get A-bombs to match Iran. Can't you sense it coming? I can sense it coming. As America pulls back, as we're pulling out of the Middle East, it's in chaos already. the world's going to get more chaotic as American power declines, and the world knows that they don't have to worry about America that much. Maybe I'm overstating it, but that's how I feel. It may take a few more years for it to be fully obvious, but it's coming. Verse 11, Revelation 3. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, that no man takes your crown. That's the logo of our church. Hold fast, because you could lose out. Look at how the worldwide church apostatized. Nobody really thought it would be that bad. Hold fast. The devil is very clever. Verse 12. Him that overcometh shall I make a pillar in the temple of my God. Now, if you're a pillar in God's temple, doesn't that mean you're a mainstay in God's government? Isn't that what that means? I mean, they're not going to turn us into concrete pillars. It means you're a mainstay in God's government. That is a wonderful opportunity to be a pillar in God's government. We're going to be at the headquarters. If you think of whatever God's final temple will look like, with probably in the main center office, God the Father, next to him, Jesus Christ, and then, I'm guessing, but people like Abraham and Daniel, Paul and David, and maybe the 12 apostles, maybe in the center core, and maybe a few others that we don't know about. But we'll probably be somewhere on the ground floor. You know, billions of men, and we're going to be maybe among the first half a million or so. We don't know the numbers, or a million that are going to be in the first resurrection. We'll probably be on the ground floor, second floor. We'll be in the center of things. That is a fabulous opportunity. We have to think about it, focus on it, keep our eye on the prize. Don't fall away. Revelation 5:10 reads, and has made us, meaning us saints, Christians, unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. So avoid backsliding and all the things that can suck us away. Revelation 19:11. Revelation 19:11, and I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he doth judge and makes war. And you read the rest of it. Christ comes back as a hero on a white horse to crush the evil world and lock up Satan. Then Revelation 20, verse 6. Revelation 20, verse 6. Blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. That's us. If we hang in there, we will be in the first resurrection. Obviously, the second resurrection is to bring back all those that never had a real chance, and that'll be billions of people. But blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. On such, the second death has no power. That means we're going to be immortal. You never have to worry about getting old and dying. Never. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Speaking of old and stuff, remember that joke I told you about? Well, I've got it. It's about aging. Got this from a man in West Texas, and he said, the more you read this joke, he says, you laugh and then you cry. And then you laugh and then you cry. So let's see if how we react to it. $5.37. That's what the kid behind the counter at Taco Bell said to me. And I dug into my pocket, pulled out some lint, 2 dimes, and a Jolly Rancher. Having already headed toward, I gave the kid a 5 spot. So I started back to my truck to get some more change. And all of a sudden, the kid with the Elmo hairdo said the hardest thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, it's okay, dude. I'll just give you the senior citizen discount. I said, I looked around to see who he was talking to. And then he said, ching, it's only $4.68. And there was some change for me. Well, I was stupefied. I'm only 58. I'm not even 60 yet. I'm a mere child. Senior citizen. I took my burrito, walked out to the truck, wondering what was wrong with Elmo. Was he blind? Me old? I sat in the truck, and my blood began to boil. Old me? I'll show him, I thought. I opened the door and headed back inside. I strode up to the counter. There he was waiting for me with his stupid smile. Before I could say a word, he held up something and jingled it in front of me like it was some, I could be easily distracted, like I was a toddler. He said, "Dude, you forgot your car keys." I stared with utter disdain at the keys, and I began to rationalize in my mind. Leaving your car keys doesn't mean you're getting senile elderly, does it? It could happen to anybody. I turned and headed back to the truck, and I slipped the key in the ignition, but it wouldn't turn. Oh, I said, "What now?" So he checked his keys again. Then I noticed purple beads on the mirror. And I had no purple beads in my mirror. Then a few other objects came into focus. The car seat, there was a child's car seat in the back seat. Happy Meal toys were spread all over the passenger seat. A half-eaten donut in the dashboard. I jumped out of the car as fast as you could say Ginkgo Biloba and flew out of the alien vehicle. Moments later, I was speeding out of the parking lot in the right car, relieved that this horrible thing had finally, this horrible nightmarish day was finally over. That's when I felt deep in my bowels hunger pain. And I reached over, and my burritos and the drink were not there. Couldn't find them. I swung back around, gathered my courage, strode back in there and be embarrassed by Mr. Elmo Hairdo one more time. There stood Elmo, draped in youth and black fingernail polish. All I could think of was, what's coming? What's this world coming to? And then I said, "Did I leave my food and drink in here?" But at this point, I was ready to ask a Boy Scout to help me and sign up for Social Security. Elmo had no clue. He had no clue. I walked back out to the trunk, and suddenly a young lad tagged, pulled at my jeans, and he said, "I think you left your drink and your bag in our truck by mistake." I took the food and drink from the little boy and sheepishly apologized. The mother, who was standing next to him, offered these very kind words to make me feel better. "It's okay. My grandfather does stuff like that all the time." All of this is to explain how I got this $300 speeding ticket. I was racing a Toyota Prius, and I was going 85 in a 40-mile-hour zone. Yes. And as I was racing some punk kid in this Toyota Prius, I told the officer who stopped me, "I am not too old to be going 85. As I walked in the front door, my wife met me halfway down the hallway. I handed her the bag of cold food and a $300 speeding ticket, promptly sat in my rocking chair and covered my legs with a blanket. The good news was that I successfully found my own way home. He still doesn't want to believe he's getting old. Well, you know, we are getting old every day, just a little bit. Somebody said in the hall the other day, "Hey, you're limping, Dr. Rick." I said, "Yeah, I'm getting older." But when the Messiah's second coming comes, we'll be immortal. We will never get old. You'll never feel another pain in your life. You'll be immortal. You'll be indestructible. You'll stay young and strong forever. That is wonderful. Now for the key verse that we talked about earlier, Revelation 21, verse 1 and 2. Revelation 21, 1 and 2. "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth." We believe, however, whatever the words mean exactly, you know, from 2 Peter, God may purge the current world with the lake of fire and maybe other things so there's no ocean and there'll just be a different world. However that's done, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband." Because in a sense, we the church are marrying God. So in other words, God's throne up in Jerusalem, I mean the heavenly Jerusalem that Moses used as a model for the temple, that heavenly throne is coming down to earth, and we will be with God. It's in the description for the rest of the chapter is called the city four square, roughly 1,500 mile cube, which wouldn't work if this earth were physical just the way it is now. So I think God is going to merge in some form or fashion the spiritual dimension and the physical dimension into one. And earth will be where God's throne will be. It will be the center of the universe. By the way, with all these new telescopes, they're finding new galaxies all the time. It's bigger than we thought it was. But also, they think earth is the center of the universe. Wherever it was created and everything's moving out from, earth seems to be the center. Perfect place for God to put his throne. By the way, I was listening this morning to a science guy doing intelligent design. There's some books called, The Privileged Planet. They've been, they expected to find a lot of planets that could possibly have life, from the Star Trek. But as they have all these telescopes in space, guess what? Earth is unique. Uniquely designed. They have yet to find even one other one. Not even one, even close. They all have all kinds of problems where life is impossible. So we are special. Earth is specially created. If there's life somewhere else, they can't find it. That's what I'm saying. They've been looking and looking, because that'd be one of their highest priorities. They look at the planets, and they're too hot, too cold, the radiation's off, just all kinds of things are wrong with them. Earth is very special. It's tilted at just the right angle. The moon is just the right distance. We've got two big planets in orbit, like big shields to protect us from debris from space. A whole bunch of things are just perfectly set in this planet. The right atmosphere, which shields us from radiation. But God the Father, his headquarters, his temple, is coming down to earth. And we're going to be with him. The earth is going to be changed. And I think that's a wonderful thing. What we need to do is keep from backsliding. Whenever you fall, I just use Winston Churchill's words. When you slip and fall, you're depressed and you want to give up, remember what Churchill said. Never, ever, never, ever give up. If your human nature or the world around you gets the best of you, just pick yourself back up. Christ's grace is big enough, and repent and keep going. Let's go to Psalms 119. I think this Psalms kind of encapsulates what we should do to help us hold on and not backslide. By the way, the 119th Psalm is built, on the alphabet of the Hebrew alphabet. And this one is built around love and God's law. That's the 119th Psalm. And each section is built on a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Let's go to 119. We'll pick it up in verse 34. Psalms 119, verse 34. Give me understanding, and I shall keep your law. Yea, I shall observe it with my whole heart. I really think that the things we have to do is learn to love God with our whole heart and try to obey God with our whole heart. By the way, loving and obeying God really go together, because the first four commandments, at least they're guidelines on how to love God, and the last six are how to love your fellow man. And we should ask God to help us love him with our whole heart. Make me, and this is, I assume, David asking God for help. Make me to go in the path of thy commandments, for therein do I delight. Verse 36, incline my heart. That's what David wrote. And all this is music and poetry, starting with roughly what's the H in our alphabet, in the Hebrew alphabet. But incline my heart. Ask God to help our heart to want to love God, to want to do the right thing, to want to obey God. And human nature, you got to fight it. I was thinking about, do you remember in Luke, where the Pharisee says, when they both go to the temple in the parable, and he says, I'm God, glad I'm not as other men. And then he lists all the bad things these other people are, including that terrible tax collector. Well, you realize that the Pharisees were separatists. They were the religious elite, at least in a certain part of Jewish society. Everybody thought they were, because of their zeal for the law, that they were the most righteous, and they pretty much bragged about it and really thought that they didn't have human nature like other people. Unfortunately, it's not true. Everybody has human nature. When Christ told them, I'm dealing with these sinners because they need a doctor, the healthy don't need it, the Pharisees were thinking, yes, we're the healthy. No, they weren't. If anything, they were actually worse than the sinners who were less self-righteous. But, of course, they didn't know that. The point is, we need to always remember our human nature is down there like a cornered rat, always looking to jump out and do bad things or say ugly things or think bad things or do ungodly things. We need to ask God to incline our heart to want to do the right thing. And it's a battle. Incline my heart unto the testimonies and not to covetousness. Turn away my eyes from beholding vanity and quicken you me in thy way. In other words, we need God to help us not want the bad stuff. And it does help if you don't look at bad stuff too much. Sometimes I use my TV thing to zap past the commercials. Not that commercials are all bad, but, you know, if you look at too many of them, you start wanting things that we don't really have to have all that stuff, right? The point is, ask God to help us, because what we need to do is love God and obey God. And the second thing we need to do is not fall to false doctrines that can lead us away. That's not our topic today, but you know, as we get closer to the end, deception will increase. There are clever people with clever arguments. Really, they're all over the internet. Tricky stuff to appeal to your human nature. So ask God to keep our eyes open. Ask God for more discernment, for more wisdom. Try and work to stay close to God. Pray for more of His Spirit. Pray that we can learn to be more godly. We can learn to love God. We need to love God and others, and in an unselfish way. Because really, agape, that's godly love, is unselfish. Because selfish love says, well, I'll like you if you like me. I'll do something good for you if you do something good for me. You know, political, which is understandable in human love and human political kinds of things. You do something for me, I'll do something for you. But godly love is, I think God says, I'm going to love you even when you're a rascal, when you're bad. I think that's the approach we should try to get. And I know it hurts God when we misbehave, but we should try to love God no matter what. Ask God to help us get that love, to get that obedience. And God's laws will help us love Him and follow Him. My final scripture is 1 Timothy 6:16. 1 Timothy 6:16. I know we quoted this scripture a couple weeks ago, but it's such a good one that I wanted on the tape program for those who may watch this around the world. 1 Timothy 6:16. Who only has immortality, dwelling in the light which no man can approach. In other words, Jesus Christ, now in heaven, lives in unapproachable light. Just bright, pure, powerful energy. We can be part of that. Maybe a lesser light, but we can be part of that if we just hang in there. We can be part of that. We just hang in. And you know, I believe that that light is the source of energy. All that energy of all those thousands of suns and exploding, well, God has the power to start that and to stop it. He has all power. And we could be lesser lights in that kingdom and be in that first resurrection if we just hang in there. By the way, Daniel 12, 2 and 3 says, those who do exploits in the end time, who help spread the gospel and stay faithful, will shine like stars. That's Daniel 12. And when heaven comes to earth, and because Christ is coming in two ways. The first wave, He came to be the Lamb of God. The second wave, He's going to be the heroic, conquering Messiah. When Christ comes the second time, and then the Father will come down here too, when the millennium's over. And we want to be part of that. And I say, stay faithful. Stay faithful. And someday we'll be stars.